Hey, y'all, it's Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. Ever order furniture online and wonder, what if? Like, what if it doesn't fit?
Little to the left. No, wait!
Yep, should have gone with Wayfair. Or what if it doesn't hold up?
That sofa was 4 days old.
Should have ordered from Wayfair. Or what if it's that material that makes that noise?
It was a sofa, I swear.
With Wayfair, there's no what if. Just style you love, quality you can trust, and furniture that actually fits your life. Visit Wayfair.com or download the Wayfair app.
Wayfair. Every style, every home.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, real people tell their stories live on stage.
I burst into tears. And I wasn't sure if I was crying because I hadn't been kissed in a really long time or if I had just never been kissed like that before.
To hear fascinating, heartbreaking, and sometimes hilarious stories from astronauts, teachers, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to hour number two of the ESPN 1320 Insiders. Get ready for the most up-to-date sports news and talk with the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Welcome back into the Insiders. I'm James Hamm. Joining me today, Jake Gaden from CBS 13. What's going on, Jake?
Hey, can I do something fun?
Okay.
I told my mom this. I told my mom last night, hey, I'm going to be on radio today. Don't call me from 10 to noon.
Yeah?
Guess what she just did?
She just called you?
Yeah. Can I call her back real quick?
No, you can't. You're going to call your mom on the air?
I want to be like, Mom, I told you I was going to be
on
the radio
today. Okay, that's
fine. Go
ahead.
Okay, hold on. Hold on. Let's do it real quick. Hold on.
Hey, we did talk about LaMelo.
We did. Hold on.
We've got Jake Gaden's mom. Make sure she doesn't curse.
Oh, she won't be. She's a fantastic.
Hey, I have to on the phone for the client. I'll call you back. Okay.
Hey, well, Mom, I'm on the radio, so I can't really talk right now. Okay.
Wow.
Jake's mom hung up on him.
She hung up on me. Wow.
Wow, Jake, that just happened. Oh, that's spectacular.
No, my mom's calling me back right now. Hold on. You just hung up on me, Mom.
Jay hung up on you. I meant to say, Jay hung up. Anyway, I said I'll call you right back.
Mom, I'm on the radio right now. Can I call you in like an hour? You're on the radio as well.
Oh, yeah. No problem. Bye.
Love you, Mom.
Wow.
Shout out Liz Meyergaden. All right, we love her.
I'm going to say she might like your siblings better than you.
Oh, no, it's a proven fact. My sister's number one in the family.
All right, there it is. Let's get to some NFL talk. The Raiders signed Jermaine Pratt yesterday, who was waived last week from the Cincinnati Bengals. He was, of course, a team captain, and he led the team in tackles. It seems like a quality pickup for Vegas.
I think so. I think this is a team-friendly deal.
One year.
I think $4 million around there. Was on a Super Bowl champion, our Super Bowl appearing team with the Cincinnati Bengals a couple years ago. Can I be real with you?
Yeah.
I think the Raiders are making competent moves now.
Wait, what?
Isn't that a wild thing to say?
That is a hot take.
It's a massively hot take. John Spytek knows what he's doing? What? No. I have sneakily liked what they have done over this offseason and who they have added. I think this is another quality move right here. When I look at the Raiders itself, though, that division is so hard.
Yeah.
Like, you're playing the Chiefs, the Chargers, the Broncos. Like,
yeah,
all three of those teams were playoff teams last year.
Well, they're all building something, too.
Yeah, well, I don't know about building. I think when you look at the Chiefs are at the pinnacle.
Well, the Chiefs are great, but the other two teams have been building for the last couple of years.
Oh, I know. And Harbaugh is great with the Chargers, and then which I want to bring up this here in a second, and then Sean Payton with the Broncos. Both those guys have young quarterbacks that are going up. Did you see Harbaugh's report that he wants to have training camp at Fresno next year?
No one in their right mind wants to have training camp in Fresno.
No, he does. He literally said on the record last year that he was like, I love Fresno, I love the people of Fresno, and I want to have training camp over there.
I don't want to disparage the good people of Fresno, but it literally is like one of the meth capitals of California. Like,
but it's a great RV park, according to Jim Harbaugh.
Well, of course there's a great RV park. where Walter White Park? I mean, like, Like, what are we talking about? Like, that plays right into exactly what I was saying, Jake. I'm going to shout out Deuce from Deuce and Mo, who made an inappropriate comment. He said, tell your mom to give him a call.
She can call. He texted me that. She can call me if she wants.
Yeah.
Thanks, Deuce.
Thanks, Deuce.
We appreciate you tuning in, though, bud.
Yeah. Thanks for tuning in. Yeah, exactly. yeah. Fresno, not to disparage Fresno completely, but like, that's not exactly somewhere I'm going to bring my NFL team to have a camp. I mean, it's hot. Go ahead, people. The good people of Fresno, you can go ahead and put in the chat what the redeeming qualities of Fresno are outside of like Fresno State producing.
I was about to say
some really really good professional athletes.
Aaron Judge.
Yeah, didn't Paul George go to Fresno State?
I believe so.
Yeah. The Cars.
Yeah, Carr. Devontae.
No. No. Like.
David and David and, Carr. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And his brother, but I also say Devontae Adams also went there.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Fresno State has had some prospects.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I don't want to know what you're laughing at.
Well, because people are keying in on Deuce being a creeper. Like,
we love Deuce, though. Here's the thing. Deuce Mason is one of my favorite people that I've met here in Sacramento. His personality is something that I just... He comes at you every single time trying to do a dig at you, but at the end of the day, he loves you with his full heart.
Yeah.
And I think he's just... I don't know.
Now I've got my dad calling on the line. My dad knows I have a radio show from 10 to noon. So if my dad is trying to get on the air, you're not getting on the air, Dad. You're not. I'm not doing that.
Did he actually?
Jake? Yeah, my dad just called. My dad knows I'm on the air. Like, so now I've got to call my dad back in a break and make sure it's nothing emergency-wise. Yeah. Ridiculous what's happening to our show here in the middle of a
Thursday. All the family stuff, the drama.
This is what happens when Kyle leaves with his dad to go hang out and go to...
It's Father's Day weekend, though.
Yeah, that's true. I know, that's a cool thing for them. They're going out on Father's Day weekend. Yeah,
so great.
Let's get back to the actual sports show that we're doing here. The Niners have made some savvy moves here.
Yes.
I actually, to be honest with you, I like the idea of signing Jermaine Pratt for the Niners.
Really?
Just because I'm not, you know, like I like, what is it, Nick Martin at the other linebacker spot, but he's a rookie and you just never know. I'm not sold on D Winners. And I'm like, okay, you know, Fred Warner's not getting any younger. I would have thought of, you know, again, the Niners did this thing where they didn't participate in free agency at all. Except for to lose their own free agents. Then they signed some of their guys. And now we're starting to see them do some smart moves. Like I thought grabbing Huff for like, what was it? A fifth or a sixth round pick.
Such a smart move. Oh
yeah. I thought that was great. I you know, like there are these other moves out there that I think that they might get involved with now that we're getting past the June 1st designation. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to lose comp picks for signing players at this point. But you went down to training camp this week. What was that like? And
different vibes.
Yeah.
Vibes are much higher, I think, right now. I think it's interesting. When you look at the past two years for the 49ers, it's been a whirlwind. They go from being in the Super Bowl, losing the Super Bowl, having the Super Bowl hangover, then having a ton of tragedy around the team last year.
A ton,
yeah. Which is abnormal. A ton of injuries, which is
that's standard. But having a rookie shot, like in the first week, you know, or
your first round pick. Okay, yeah. let's clarify this. Your first round pick being shot
in the chest.
Yes,
like right before the season starts.
Yes.
Yeah, just like there are a lot of things. You're right.
So, I think the fact that they got a long off season, a normal long off season, no drama. Had great draft picks. I thought they had a great solid draft of what they got.
Yep.
And now coming into training camp, have everyone locked up on contracts. Everyone's happy. The mood is great. I think truly that everyone is in a good spot right now. I think Trent Williams, the fact that the 16-year vet showed up to his first mini camp in a decade, speaks volumes of what they're trying to build there. I think the culture is back. I think they got rid of some of the people that might have affected the culture. And I think I think their best move this offseason was one of the people they traded away, Deebo Samuel.
Yeah.
Did you see the video of him at Commander's camp yesterday?
I did not.
Oh, he looked slow. He looks super. He looked like he had weights in his feet.
I did see Tony Jones, who covers the Utah Jazz, the Denver Nuggets, and I think the Detroit Pistons, which is weird that he covers like three teams for the Athletic. I think he posted that he could have defended Deebo Samuel.
All I'm saying is I think that was the, when I talk about culture and bringing them, having the right people in the building, I'm not saying Deebo was a bad person. I just think Debo's time was up with the 49ers, and it was clearly evident last year. I think having a reset year like this year, I think, and having a new culture and building a new culture like that, especially with Robert Saleh back in the mix, you just feel it. You feel it. It doesn't feel like that was a 6-11 team practicing this past week. Now, have they put any pads on? Have they played anybody? No. But vibes-wise, compared to what last year was during training camp and minicamp, whew, night and day.
Yeah.
Night and day.
Well, that, and I mean, the hits just kept coming for them last year. Like, you know, again, you had the McCaffrey injury in training camp where everyone thought he was going to show up like any day. And then he doesn't show up until like week 9. Like, he just kept having issues with inflammation, what in his calves,
calf,
right?
Yep.
On top of that, you had the Brandon Ayuk situation where he dragged it all the way out and then basically became a problem by dragging it out and then almost like clowned himself once he did sign, saying, I probably should have done this a while ago. Like, shout out to your college's own, Brandon Ayuk. But still, it was one of those weird situations. Then you have, again, the Pearsall situation. Then you have Tavarius Ward losing a child. Then you had Trent Williams' family loss as well. Like, it just felt like all of the weight of the world, anything that could go wrong with that team went wrong. And so it's really good to hear that the vibe around the team right now is good. I'm still concerned about their depth. They do have one of the easiest schedules in the NFL.
I was about to say, I think they're cruising to over 10 wins. I wouldn't be surprised if they flip it and go 11-6 this next year.
Yeah, that's, and it's funny too, because Kyle's had in the rundown, we were going to talk about this a couple of times, but the 49ers, according to Aaron Schatz from ESPN, they have the best chance of going from an 11-loss team to a playoff team, to an 11-win team.
I do have a hot take with this, though.
Uh-oh.
I don't think they win the division.
I think that division's wide open.
Really? You don't think the Rams own that division?
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe. But, I'm never sold on the Rams. Like, they have, like, huge fluctuations in quality of play. And, you know, part of that is quarterback play. Part of it's, you know, they had injury issues last year, and that clearly hurt them early on.
No, but Cooper Kupp.
Yeah. Year. No, but they brought it, and didn't they bring in Devontae Adams?
They did.
Yeah, and they still have Puka Nacua.
Yes.
And they still have, you know, other young, Atwell. They have that. Yes. They've got
Atwell.
Yeah, they've got a lot of talent. And, you know, again, they're great when their running back's healthy. When their running back's not healthy, they're mid. And that's just something that they've dealt with. I think that division's wide open. I don't fear Seattle. I don't fear Arizona. Like, at least those teams play hard. But that's something the 49ers have to get. The Niners, talent-wise, is still the most elite group that I think is in the division.
It's just making sure they stay healthy and everything comes together.
Well, that's my concern with, like, the way they didn't attack their offensive line at all during the draft. Like, very, very surprising that they didn't go get a guard or center or a right tackle or a left tackle to take over for Trent Williams down the road.
I just think with Trent, he's alluded to having conversations with Shanny about how long he wants to play. And I think from the conversations he's had, he's trying to be in the Elite 40 club. He said that to us on Tuesday. Like, if everything goes well, he'd like to play to 40. And he's 36 or 37 now.
That's crazy.
I think he could do it, though. I think if you load management him, absolutely. I think at the end of the day, he is not going to retire until there's nothing left in the tank, and I think he'd give a very good heads up to the 49er front brass when that happens. He's also chasing a ring, and this is his best opportunity to do it with this team.
Yeah,
he's getting paid.
He's 36. He'll be 37 on July 19th.
Oh.
Yeah, so
a month away.
Okay, but you're talking 4 more seasons. I don't know. I would love to see it because he's still elite.
He still looks so good, though.
Yeah, he's still, like, for me, he's the most important player on that roster.
No, I disagree.
Oh, you. Who do you think it is?
Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah, but again, Christian McCaffrey, I mean, is it possible that, Trent Williams plays longer than Christian McCaffrey? I don't know. Like, running backs don't hold up at all, and he's a running back who's a major injury issues. Yeah, I love Christian McCaffrey, but like building your entire offense around him and then having miss 8 or 10 weeks.
I don't know.
And then go out again to finish the season.
I don't know about that.
Like, man, you have got to have somebody who can catch the ball out of the backfield, and that's where he really, really struggled. Where the 49ers really struggled without him.
Well, I think the other thing is interesting. Christian McCaffrey is about to become a father. So I don't know if dad strength will come into play here this next season. There's a good possibility of that. That is a thing. I'm not superstitious. I'm just stitious. Okay, so I think that's a stitious thing. I also think that he said yesterday he's the healthiest he's ever been in the past year, and he's attacked his offseason program differently this year by building himself up and maybe being a little more lighter in his build up to being able to be game ready. And
yeah, he overworked himself.
Oh, 100%. Because he's, as Shanahan put it, he's a good psychopath.
Yeah. But, I mean, realistically, you don't see that very often where somebody worked out so much that they ended up inflaming, like their calf muscles to a point where they couldn't hardly walk.
Calf and Achilles.
Yeah, I mean, and those are scary injuries, especially for a guy who's had knee injuries, who's had other injuries to, you know, lower extremity injuries. I love watching McCaffrey play. He's such a dynamic receiver out of the backfield that changes everything for the 49ers. I mean, he made, without him there, it made Debo just look completely lost.
I also think he's so important this year is because of your wide receiver core. You have Ayuk. You have Pearsall. Who's next after that? Jacob Cowing?
No, you have Juwan Jennings.
Juwan Jennings.
Who is number one?
Okay, sorry. Juwan Jennings.
Yeah.
Brandon Ayuk. Pearsall.
Yeah. They signed DeMarcus Robinson, but there's talk that he's going to be suspended for a couple of games to start the season. Like, again, when I'm looking at the Niners roster right now, they have got to address some of these holes that they have in their roster. If an offensive guard pops up, if there's a right tackle that makes sense, go get some of these guys. Go add the depth that you need, because as of right now, this team struggled with depth last year and didn't get to where they needed to be because of depth issues. And you force guys to play roles that they weren't comfortable playing, and it just didn't work out. So, all right, we're going to step aside. When we come back, we're going to dive back into some of these Kings questions that we've been working on, because players like Malik Monk keep coming up in rumors that I'm hearing, but I feel like almost every single player in Sacramento has been mentioned in some rumor that I've heard behind the scenes, and we're going to maybe break into that a little bit. We're the Insiders here on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader. We'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento Sports Leader.
It's Charles Barkley here with Wayfair. And let me tell you, game day is serious business at my house. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grill accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game, and head to Wayfair.com to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Are you looking for a pro football podcast that doesn't put you to sleep with spreadsheets or insult you with mindless hot takes? Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL Podcast with Dan Hansis and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, back to The Insiders, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Welcome back into The Insiders. We're having some technical difficulties with the stream out of nowhere. So it's just me hanging out with no Jake Gaden. Jake is still on the radio side. Can you hear me, Jake?
Oh, I can hear you, buddy.
All right. So we're still going to plug through because, of course, this is actually a radio show.
I'm about to hop on. If you emailed me, I should be here in a second.
Yeah.
Did you email me?
I think so, unless I got the wrong email address. But
JG.
Well, do you want to put that out on the air?
No, not really. That would be bad.
Yeah, I think we're all right.
How?
That's weird. All right.
Okay, well, we'll stick here and just be good with it.
Yeah, let's just get back to the show.
Okay. I just don't have Chatty House to look at.
That's right. Which sometimes I got to be honest, it's not a bad thing.
Okay, good.
It's not a bad thing sometimes. Let's get back into the Kings, though. What feels different for you this time around? Because you've been around for a couple of regimes now. You know, we always have this conversation with Brendan Nunes. It's one thing when you've only dealt with one head coach, and then he gets fired, and then you got another head coach, and like things go crazy. Like Brendan's been around for 4 years now, mm-hmm. and he's seen four head coaches. You've been around 3 years, and so how many head coaches have you?
Two.
You're only at two?
Only Mike and Doug.
Oh, so you didn't deal with the Luke Walton, Alvin Gentry era?
No, I missed that.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, what feels different? Because I do think the vibe is different. And the one thing, I'll point out, and I have not been able to get to a pre-draft workout yet.
I have.
But they keep running them at 10:30, so right in the middle of my show, I can't get there, right? It just feels like they're getting back to basics and back to normal and doing things that make sense. And I'm not sure why they got away from all that. But there does seem to be sort of a normalization of the front office / coaching staff.
It's a level of professionalism.
Oh.
I think that's where I'm going to lean more towards a professionalism, an organizational awareness, a direction.
Yeah.
I feel like they had that when I got here in Mike's first year. So when I first got here, I was literally thrown into Mike. It was right after his press conference. Mm-hmm. I just remember how competent he was, the sense of purpose, the sense of direction, how they wanted to go about things. They went about it in a certain way. I would say it's the same level with Scott Perry and his staff now. And I think that the interesting part of how things have been going vibe-wise over there is it's a much more relaxed atmosphere. I think it's a lot of evaluating right now. There's no pressure on anybody, I can tell you that much. I think everyone's trying to evaluate and trying to make this thing and get this thing right, which I think Scott has been given the autonomy to actually be able to go do that. I think the other part of it is this. Right? Maybe this is me just talking out loud. It doesn't feel like there's people that should not be in these conversations. I think they're not part of those conversations right now, if that makes any sense. People that are possibly in the ownership side of things that could be sticking their fingers into things. I think they've held out and let the smart basketball people do the smart basketball things. But vibe-wise, I think they're trying to find – they're just trying to get this roster right. I think that's the key right now.
That's refreshing. They've got a lot of work to do. So
of course
if
they
you're,
do.
If you're not laser focused on realistically the basics, then I don't know what exactly you're doing.
But they had to get back to the basics because everything got way too complicated.
Yeah. I feel like there's a problem with this group that, you know, they in the past they just lose the basics, the compass that you have to have as a franchise. Like, you get to a certain point and then you just completely fade, right? You move the wrong way. And at some point, you got to do what's best for the franchise, not overvalue individuals that are making moves that don't make sense. So I'm actually, I like what's happening. I like the addition of BJ Armstrong to go with Scott Perry. I like the fact that Doug Christie has built a staff that looks like there are adults in the room. And that's not to disparage any staff that Mike Brown had. I just, when you're a new head coach and you're trying to build a staff, sometimes you don't know what exactly it is that
you're going. Yeah.
Yeah. Who, or what you even need. And I think Scott has done a really good job of helping sort of develop that group into something that should support Doug in the right way.
I think also the thing with Doug is the people that the biggest knock he had on last year is, like, I feel like he didn't have the people that he felt confident in surrounding himself with.
Oh, very much so.
So I think now that he has the people that he wants around him, I think not like he's going to let his guard down more, but I think he's going to definitely be able to bounce ideas off of people more on a more consistent basis. I like the Mike Woodson hire. I think Woodson having that experience, especially in New York, is going to be something that's going to be invaluable to him to be able to bounce ideas off of and listen to. I don't know if Doug's going to have a quote offensive and defensive coordinator. From my understanding, like, is that something that you've heard at all, James?
That's interesting because, to be honest with you, I had never like really seen an offensive and defensive coordinator situation.
Like Mike did?
Like, well...
Because Mike had it.
No, because Luke Walton started it first. Like, he had an offensive coordinator, a defensive coordinator. He even had, like, a quality control manager.
Okay.
I just sent the link to your other email.
Oh, thank you.
I don't know if that will work or not, but we'll see. Yeah, I don't know that you need an offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator in today's NBA. But then again, like, there have been, you know, like, defensive coaches or, you know, Igor Kokoskov. Came in, was a defensive guy. You know, even going back to years and years ago with Rick Adelman, like, Elston Turner was in charge of the defense. They didn't call him a defensive coordinator, but he's in charge of the defense.
What was the technical term for him? Just an assistant coach?
Just an assistant. An assistant, yeah. And I think that the Kings the last couple of years have got really into, like, the associate head coach and the defensive coordinator and the offensive coordinator, these things that, I mean, maybe they work, maybe they don't. But I also think when the offense doesn't go well, like, who are you blaming? Because, like, I don't remember a lot of people just going at Jay Triano.
No.
Because Jay Triano would be like, well, I did have the highest rated offense 2 years ago, and then bad things have happened.
Did you see Jake went to I think, to Dallas?
He went to Dallas. Yeah, right in the middle of them courting...
Jason Kidd.
Jason Kidd being courted by the Knicks. They hired Jay Triano, which was like, I don't think they're going to allow Jason Kidd to go to New York and be...
And do that.
Yeah.
Hold on. No, StreamYard. I think it's a StreamYard thing.
Oh, all right. Well,
I can't be real with you. They threw something on. We've identified an issue with Google Cloud Services that is affecting our StreamYard. Our team has identified this as a third-party global issue. June 12th, 2025.
Well, we got a global issue. Somehow I'm still on the stream.
Hi, everybody.
But no one else is.
I wanted everyone to listen to me today.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on Doug's staff overall?
Veteran group surrounded by a quote-unquote rookie head coach that I think is going to find a balance on what the roster needs. Here's the thing. I can't evaluate his staff until I know the players that he's coaching because I'm trying to figure out, like, what offense, what defense they're going to run based on personnel. I think he put together a very veteran staff, but I don't know, like, X's and O's wise, how they're going to get this thing going.
Okay.
Because it goes in different directions based on the personnel on the roster.
I totally get that. I mean, you can try to make bad defensive players play defense better, right? I think that that's part of coaching, is to try to force guys to be better defensively. But I also think that at the end of the day, like, if a guy has never played defense his entire career, you might be able to get him to play defense in the first 3 minutes of a game. But when you get to the second quarter, you're going to see exactly who he's always been as a player.
I'm also intrigued to see, okay, so like Bobby Jackson is someone that's held in high regard in the Kings organization, to see what he brings to the team. Great mm-hmm. developer of players, by the way. Incredible developer. Another person that I'm excited to see what role how his role changes under Doug's staff now is Leonardo Barbosa.
Leandro Barbosa. Yep.
LB. I think LB might have a bigger role this next year.
No, I think so. That's a good possibility, too. For people who don't know, Leandro Barbosa, again, spent a ton of time with Doug going out and hitting different countries while they're training Domantas Sabonis. So they spend a lot of time together. There's trust there. There's a bond there. And that's a good thing. You know,
you need that, though. You need it in the coaching staff. You have to. Yeah, you can't be looking over your shoulder.
Between Bobby and Leandro, I think Doug sort of fits that. He got the guys that he needs, that he feels comfortable with, and, you know, sort of the trust pieces
And then you have a Mike Woodson guy that will check you.
Well, I think he'll check you. I think he'll challenge you. I think he'll also help you organize everything.
Yes.
And take some of that stress that, like, we saw towards the end of the season, Doug wore thin. Like, there started to become a point where it's like, man, this dude is exhausted. He got chippy. You could see he was, like, he was very honest with us. He's getting 2 or 3 hours of sleep a night. Like, he was taking on everything himself, and that's partially because, like, he had lost 2 assistant coaches, the equivalent of, when Mike Brown left and he was elevated, they didn't replace him. And then when Luke Luck stepped away, they didn't replace him. But on top of that, Barbosa missed a huge amount of time last year. He tore his quad at one point, and then he had a family issue and had to go back home for, I don't know, a couple of weeks, I believe. So he was down, like, sort of the support staff. And I think at that point, Doug took on way too much himself. I also, like, I like Mike Miller as an assistant. He's a long, long time assistant coach who's actually stepped up and been interim head coach and had the opportunity to be, you know, to take on more of a job, mm-hmm. To take on more. And now you're bringing, again, Bobby and Leandro back. It's starting to piece together where you feel kind of comfortable with what they have.
You know Doug really well, right? Mm-hmm. You spent plenty of car rides with him driving up to the NBC Sports studio. Have you ever seen Doug like he was last year?
No, not really. I could tell that he just was like there wasn't anything left in the tank. Like, he's living on coffee.
When did you notice that? Was that in the final 10 games of the season?
Yeah, probably the last 2 weeks. I think, you know, the momentum of, like, you take over a team and you get all hopped up, right? You get all energized.
The 7-game winning streak or whatever.
Yeah,
it was.
Yeah. You're feeling like you're on top of the world. Then they trade De'Aaron Fox, and that wiped the legs out from under. Because, Doug Christie, just so you know, like, when they drafted De'Aaron Fox, we worked together at NBC, and he had been telling Vlade Divac about this De'Aaron Fox kid for months. He loved De'Aaron Fox, the player. Again, lefty. Doug is a left-handed player, but he's also, you know, a left-handed person. He loves lefties. He, like, the second he watched a Kentucky game, you're watching Kentucky for Bam. You're watching Kentucky for Malik Monk. And he's like, I don't care about those guys. This Fox kid is unbelievable. And that's who you got to go get. And so to trade Fox, it did take a lot of the wind out of the sails of not just Doug, but the team. I mean, like, we talk about, like, Uncle Keegan. He's Uncle Keegan because he takes care of, he pushes a stroller for De'Aaron and his wife. Like, they're super close. They're family. And, you know, you got Domantas Sabonis and him have this connection. You have Malik Monk is one of his best friends. You have all of these people in the locker room that are close with him. And then he's gone. And I think that put a tremendous amount of stress on Doug to try to not only, like, deal with the loss of your franchise player, but also deal with the fact that now you have a different player in Zach LaVine and trying to figure out how to integrate Zach in and having Zach be great for 3 nights and then horrible for 2 and just disappear on you. And you're trying to figure out, like, who he is as a player while you're running a team and trying to, you know, and you're down assistants. So I think there were so many layers to what was happening. And then we get to the point where players start getting hurt late in the season. So whether it was Malik or whether it was Domas or
LaRavia.
Yeah. Like, look how much he relied on Jake LaRavia for a stint. He's a dude that you're defending Jokic with. And then all of a sudden he's gone. So it was a tough season. And I thought Doug wore down to, like, a nub, and then he was chippy. Like, he got chippy with Matt George. He got chippy with me. He got chippy with Jeremiah. Like, you could feel it, but it wasn't like, hey, I'm being a jerk. It was like, man.
Guys, give me a break here.
The dude is exhausted. Dude is exhausted. And stop asking the same exact questions. And, you know, like, it just got to a point where you could see him wearing thin. Where I even thought there were questions that were legitimate questions, but he started to take the wrong way. You know, like, even when I asked him about their home record, he's like, well, I'm not under 500 at home. And it's like, okay, bro, we're not going to get into semantics here. Your team is horrible at home. I don't care. like you've lost even under the Doug Christie regime. You guys have got curb stomped by people. Like,
you shouldn't have been.
Like embarrassed at home. Like don't give me that we're okay. Like, yeah, okay, your record is over 500 at home since you took over the team, but you're still under 500 as a squad. And it's not like you weren't part of the coaching staff the first 30 something games of the season.
You were part of it.
Yeah. And so but I didn't take offense to it because I could tell that he's just like he was worn out, and I would be too. I would try to take on everything myself if I were in that situation, because if you're thrust into it on the fly and then all of a sudden you lose your best player 2 weeks later and then all of a sudden you got injuries and you got new players and you're like, what in the world is like, how do you wrap your brain around what's happening and try to keep the thing on its rails? And I thought at least he did that, where we didn't have complete dissension down the stretch, where we didn't have a Tyrone Corbin 7-21 stretch, where we didn't have, you know, like everybody in the building is like, you got to get this guy out of here. He doesn't know what he's doing. I think he earned a second shot at running this team, but with a much better built roster.
I'm excited to see him energized again for this next year.
Oh yeah, he's gonna be.
I think he probably, if I had a guess, he probably got away after the end of the season. 1-2-3 Cabo, right?
Yeah.
or I don't know. Where does him and Jackie like going a couple play, fun places around the world? Am I wrong on this?
They get remarried every year.
Where do they like? I think they go to Mexico for that, or am I?
No, they have different spots and they do different types of weddings.
Side of the point.
Sometimes they go to the Justice of the Peace. Sometimes they do, like. Like, they do all kinds of different types of ceremonies.
All I know is this. I think the man got away. I think he got the job, and now he's re-energized. I wish I we see him at these workouts. I've always wanted to just, you know where it is. He's sitting on the coach's sideline. I'll pop over and, hey, Doug, how are you? But I don't think that's – I think I get tackled by King's PR if that happens. So
yeah, media relations would lasso you,
yes.
I believe.
Yes.
They have a lasso that they would just like
– There's an invisible line that you can't cross. Don't cross
Yeah,
it.
Don't step on the – there's on the sideline there's a black painted area.
Yes.
Yeah, don't step on the court.
No, if you do. But yeah. I think Doug is going to come back feeling much better about where he's at, the roster. It just depends on the personnel, I think. And I think he's part of that conversation with Scott and what this team looks like next year.
Yeah, I hope that they have a list of players that they're going to chase, and that Doug Christie is part of, like, deciphering that list and hopefully, but at the end of the day, it's going to be Scott Perry who's got to build the team.
Yep.
All right, we're going to step aside. When we come back, we will try to see if we worked out some of the kinks in our StreamYard issue. But if not, join us on the radio. We're the insiders here on ESPN 1320, Sacramento sports leader.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento's sports leader.
It's Charles Barkley here with Wayfair. And let me tell you, game day is serious business at my house. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game, and head to Wayfair.com to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, back to The Insiders, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Welcome back into The Insiders. I am James Hamm. Joining me today, CBS 13's Jake Gayden. Jake,
what's going on?
We're surviving without StreamYard. It's like the teleprompter's down. Damian Barling's coming in.
Oh, boy. What's going on, my guy?
I don't know if Damian knows, but StreamYard is completely shot, and we're trying to get through a show with... I'm on StreamYard, but Jake is not, and...
Well, the beauty of it is my voice and Jake's voice carried through your screen, and we're a radio show, so it's cool.
So we're good.
Yeah. As long as I can hear Jake and hear me and hear the other mics, it's fine. We'll try to get it fixed along the way, but... Yeah, it's all good.
I thought you were going to say it's good news, so don't want everyone else to see this Yankee uniform.
Oh, no, that's fine. Come on, man. You can't have a face like Jake Gaydon and not be on camera.
Hey,
come on, man.
Hey,
Come on, man.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate you.
Stupid New York Yankees gear over there, but that's fine.
It's okay.
That's funny. Okay.
The Yankees are fine.
All right. Welcome in, Damian Barling. I don't have the buttons to
You don't need the buttons.
Pull up to,
it's all good.
To play
I'm just
some
proud
song.
Of you. You're over there. You're on that side. You're... Not touching any of the buttons, like, it's fine. We got this.
I don't touch buttons.
Got That's... Joe in there and control everything. Like, as long as Joe is over there, we're just fine.
We've got rules here.
Yeah, yeah.
James doesn't touch any of the buttons.
That's fine.
Let's dive into this the finals game last night. Just how shocked were you that it was Indiana who was the team?
Not.
No?
I guess I'm alone.
No, I'm with
I'm
you.
Not.
I'm not.
Like,
surprised.
I was absolutely... Not shocked. Our guy Ken Anthony next door at the Eagle, right as I'm leaving, he was like, "Who you got tonight?" I was like, "I think I got the Pacers tonight."
Ooh.
And it was just like I felt like we talked about this yesterday. I felt like math made me feel like the Pacers had to win. I don't want them to be in a if they're winning every other game, they could from this point on, you win every other game, you can win the series. I don't want them in a position where they have to beat OKC twice in a row. That happened twice all year.
All year.
And to think it's going to happen in a seven-game series is really, really tough. So you've got yourself in a position now where you've got another home court game. The Pacers, I thought they made some great adjustments going into game three. They were significantly better in the paint. Both teams were, really. There were 90 points scored in the paint last night. But we said all day yesterday, 34 in the first two games, 34 in game one, 34 in game two. That's not enough. You're relying on that 3-point shot. You can't break Oklahoma City's defense, but if you can bend that interior defense just a little bit with Pascal Siakam and Miles Turner, I think you'd be in really good shape. Siakam was great last night. I think we learned last night that Miles Turner is dealing with like some sort of respiratory issue, but he was solid. Like they're
great
they're
defensively.
Probably going to need really, really good defensively. Yeah. I thought Indiana was really terrific yesterday on the defensive end. The Thunder missed free throws. The game was kind of played at that Indiana pace. You know, I think it was 64 points at halftime for the Pacers. I think those are all good signs for them, good metrics for them. Never got to a double-digit lead either way. That's a good sign. Really, I think that's a better sign for Indiana because we know how Oklahoma City can run away with this. So I have not, and I still won't pick a winner in this series. I just thought too many smart people were overlooking Indiana. And last night, I think, was a prime reason why. This is a good basketball team who is good enough defensively. And as great of a coach as Mark Daigneault is, I think Rick Carlisle is a little bit better. He's certainly more experienced, more seasoned in these types of situations. And when it comes to adjustments, that's the guy I'm going to lean on.
I think there's two names that I want to add to that list of guys that you just put out there. Mm-hmm. One was Obi Toppin. I think his minutes off the bench were very key.
And that bench was spectacular.
When he jumped over everybody for that hammer.
Yes.
Like, what in the world? Yeah.
Benedict Mathurin.
Mathurin,
excuse me, saying his name correctly. Was it 27 points in 22 minutes? The efficiency for him yesterday was incredible. I think that's the guy where if he can do that again for game four or game five, come off the bench and have that production, man, how are you're going to be able to match the depth that OKC has. I can tell you that much.
And this is, I don't think there are a lot of teams in the entire league that can.
No.
And Indiana, I think, is one.
Well, I think the depth of OKC is their depth pieces are great defenders and 10 to 12 points per game if they really go off,
mm-hmm.
right? Your Cason Wallace or...
Caruso.
Caruso or who's the other? Aaron Wiggins. Like, these guys are... Yeah. If they are going to, like, come off the bench and give you a big pop, it's like two of them scoring double figures. the Pacers have one or two guys coming off the bench that can get 20 without any question. Mathurin can get you 20. TJ McConnell can beat you up for 10 or 12.
He was great in Tyrese's minutes.
He can even get up a little higher. And then you have Obi Toppin. And like, so you have these wild card pieces that really did show up, and something that I think a lot of people overlooked. They both are incredible depth teams.
Yep.
But one of them has defensive depth and one of them has offensive depth, and the offensive depth won out. And I saw an OKC team that looked rattled. I was like,
I was gonna say,
Chet looked rattled by the defense from Turner, and I thought SGA looked rattled in moments too.
Now, Jame, I was going to ask you, did you notice that maybe OKC looked a little rattled within that first time being in an NBA Finals on the road in Indiana? Did you feel like they had that?
I actually didn't. I guess I need to watch more ball. I remember noting I thought Indiana did so much wrong in the final 90 seconds. Mm. I really thought they were going to blow the game.
After the technical foul?
Yeah. I was just like, oh, yeah. Oh,
with 2 minutes left, I think it was.
I had that in the rundown initially.
Yeah, you did.
The turnover by Caruso picks Halliburton's pocket, and then Nesmith should have been called for flagrant.
I think everyone's going to have strong feelings. I absolutely thought he was getting called for a flagrant, but the official said he didn't wind up. He didn't hit above the neck. Like, he laid out. I feel like he laid out the reasons why it wasn't a flagrant. I thought it was going to be called when he said, well, he didn't wind up. It was like, oh.
It was dangerous, okay. Though. That's where I thought it would be a flagrant, because it looked dangerous.
Yeah, there was he sold it a little bit, which is that's what you do. Stay on the ground. That's fine. It's gamesmanship. It's whatever. But
give him the Oscar.
They kept fouling. They kept fouling, and it reminded me of Game One, where we're watching it. Like, the only positive thing I could come up with in Game One was, well, at least OKC is scoring with the clock stopped. Yeah. Like, that's all Indiana had going for them, but they kept chipping away, and it's like, oh, they fouled again. Indiana scoring without the clock moving. So Indiana's fouling again, and it's like, now it's the roles are reversed, and OKC's trying to come back, and they're scoring with the clock stopped, but they were hitting 50% of their free throws in those final minutes, which, the math doesn't, bear out to you hit your free throws, you win the game. The math doesn't work for that. But still, you could change the complexion of the game if you're hitting those free throws late when Indiana I thought Indiana was the team that looked rattled in the final few minutes. There was a possession where Shea came up. I think it was still two possessions, so it was either five or six. And I'm watching Shea like, man, he's composed. Like, he looks good right here. I got, for a team that's up six, like, I don't feel good about the Pacers right here. And I think he took a dribble sidestep three. It wasn't a bad look. I don't think anyone would be mad at it, but he missed, and it's like, oh, I think that's the game. Mm-hmm. And, it got to the point where you can't have any lost possessions, and that became a lost possession. And I don't know. I guess I didn't pick up on that. I didn't think they look rattled. They haven't been particularly good on the road. I think Jesse put it in our notes this morning. They're 4-4 in the postseason on the road. And for a team that won 68 games during the year, 500 on the road in the playoffs is like, okay.
Yeah.
And don't go 4-5, because that's an entirely, and that's the other thing about, I think for the first time all postseason, there's pressure on Oklahoma City.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think I don't think there was pressure on them after Game One. I don't think at any point in the Minnesota series was there. I think this is the very first time this entire postseason Oklahoma City has had pressure on them.
You don't think Denver, that Game Four in Denver, wasn't pressure?
Yes.
That they won?
But I don't think they didn't let yesterday's game slip away. Indiana beat them.
Yeah. Not wrong.
Denver, and credit to Denver, they absolutely beat Oklahoma City. But, man, the Thunder really helped.
Yeah, straight up.
The Thunder helped a lot in that Game 3, and that's not to take away from Denver. I love the way that they played in that series. But I think they also knew they're going to run out of gas. They just don't have enough guys. If this series goes 6 or 7, they can't keep up with us. They're at a 2-1 deficit. They can't sustain this. They're out on the floor with those guys. They know Indiana can, because they're running 10 deep. This is the first team I think they've played all postseason that runs that many guys.
Yeah. It's been a great series.
I don't care.
Last night is one of the best games of the playoffs, I think. You know, I know we've had, you know, Tyrese killing it, but just a wire-to-wire game, that one was spectacular.
I think that the best part about this series is throw out whatever ratings there are, what small market it is. It shows you that when you have two great teams and they compete against each other at a high level, you're going to get some really good basketball. Can I ask Dame?
And in the end, that's all that matters. Oh, yeah, straight up. Give me good basketball.
Can I ask Dame real quick before we go, one quick thing? Yeah. Mike Brown. Is he the next head coach of the Knicks?
Mike Brown?
Mike Brown.
No.
Thank you. I don't think it is.
I think he is. I think he will be the next head coach of the Knicks.
I think they're going
to get... So I saw something today about Mike Woodson.
No, Mike Brown. Athletic throughout this morning.
Boy, hey, good luck to Mike. Hey, good luck to Mike.
He's in the mix from everything I know.
Sorry.
He's in the mix.
Very good.
And he's also very close.
Well, they don't have to ask permission for anybody, so good luck.
You should hear about my dating profile for the Knicks. It's quite funny.
Oh, that's terrific.
Yeah, because that's what it feels like. It feels like they just keep swiping right. And
they're getting rejected, man.
Yeah, nobody.
I told them they got to change the profile, okay? It's Jalen Brunson and then Timothee Chalamet for the right.
Well,
other
stop
four
going
photos.
After married women. It's time to go. Yeah, it's time. Say goodbye, James.
All right, it's time to go. Thanks for tuning in to The Insiders. We will be back tomorrow. I think Jesse Tapia is joining me tomorrow.
Thanks for letting me kick it here today. It was a lot of fun, James.
Thanks for showing up, Jenkins.
Always.
It's awesome to see you. I don't know. Drink water and be nice to people? Is that what Kyle said?
There you go.
Yeah, look at you.
And don't go swim in the river. How about that?
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.